Judiciary Committee meeting to order. It's about 1:44. Senator Wilikowski, Senator, what's his name? Dyson? Thank you. And Senator Coghill. I understand Senator McGuire will be along shortly, and Senator Olson, I think, is in a finance committee, if I recall correctly. Today, three things on the calendar docket to deal with. We'll deal with House Bill 250, which is Senator Olson, and it's the medical malpractice. I did not close public testimony, so I think we gave only the last 4 or 5 minutes of the committee last time, so we made Erica talk very fast. Then we'll take up House Bill 127, which is the ombudsman bill, and then we'll go to House Bill 140, which is the regulatory review and notice comment. And so, Erica, why don't you come on forward? And so, last time we were here, we pushed you along pretty hard. We were just last few minutes, and I wanted you to at least get it on the record. But is there anything that you needed to add to your testimony? Because I do have some online to testify, but you have the floor.
Thank you, Chairman Coghill, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erica O'Sullivan, staff to Representative Kurt Olson, and I would like to thank the committee for taking up the bill at this late hour of the session. I would be happy to go over the explanation of changes from version A to version P.A, if that's the will of the committee, or be available to answer questions. Otherwise, I would like to allow Mr. Wojcicki, if he's online, to testify, and Megan Wallace from Ledge Legal is online as well to answer questions.
If you could give us what the version changes were, that will give us a little bit of how you got the bill to where it's at. I think that would be helpful to us, if you don't mind. Is that right? It's a P.A.
P.A. Absolutely. So the changes from version A, which was the original bill that was introduced, to P.A, which you have before you today, are as follows. On page 1, line 1 of the bill title, the words liability and responsibility were deleted. And then to make the language consistent throughout the bill, they were deleted in section 1A, on page 1, line 12, and also under section 2.1 on page 3, line 14. So liability and responsibility were deleted. The sponsor felt that including the word liability undermined the intent of the bill, and that an expression of liability was in fact closer to an admission of negligence and should not necessarily be excluded in a civil case or arbitration. And similarly, the word responsibility, though prefaced with an expression of, is arguably closer to the definition of liability as well. So that's why those words were removed. The next change under section 1A, page 2, line 14, subsection 5 was added. And this subsection was added with the intent of closing a potential loophole should an indirect offer to compromise, write off, or furnish payment occur. So that would be, for example, a doctor asking a hospital to write off, furnish payment, etc. The next change, under section 1, page 2, line 18, subsection B was added, and the sponsor felt that this subsection was necessary to clarify that if a statement prefaced by or made in conjunction with an apology that admits liability or negligence be subject to additional scrutiny and not necessarily deemed inadmissible. On page 3, line 7, under section 09.55.545, the word to was deleted, and in writing that the patient or patient's legal representative may was inserted. The addition of in writing remedies a potential proof problem. That was something brought forth by the first co-sponsor, Representative Grunberg. This way everyone has their bases covered, everyone is informed of their rights. In changing to may, again, ensured that patients were advised, patients or their legal representatives were advised of their rights, but this was making them aware versus a directive to seek legal counsel. So again, aware versus a directive. And finally, under section 4, page 4, line 4, The conditional effect was amended to include section AS09.55.545. As it read in the original bill, only AS09.55.544 would require a two-thirds majority to take effect, and this left open the possibility that should House Bill 250 pass with a simple majority, AS09.55.545 would be added, and the other section, AS.09.55.544, would not. So it's basically a simple language cleanup there.
So it would go forward whether the court rule went. If the court rule doesn't go, the statutory language would stay.
Correct.
You see the idea.
That's correct.
Got it. Questions at this point? Senator Wilkowski.
Have you heard of any opposition to the bill?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, we personally, Representative Olson's office, has not heard any direct opposition. There was a trial attorney that called in the very first hearing and expressed some concern. I think with the new language changes that we've made, excluding liability and responsibility, that most people were satisfied with those changes.
That's sort of what I was getting at. My understanding is this was a compromise between the doctors and the lawyers. Is that fair to say?
and the patients, I hope,
yeah,
as well.
Everyone involved.
But, yeah, we've been working on this for quite a while, and we want to, again, open up the dialogue, open up that conversation with doctors, but still have important consumer protection components in the bill.
Senator Wilkowski.
Have there been cases where doctors have apologized and then had that used against them in court? Do you know?
We do have some public testimony, and maybe we get that public testimony up. And I think you might get something if he wrote a book on this particular topic.
Yes, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. Perhaps Mr. Doug Wachez could speak to that a little bit more. The doctors who we spoke with and the healthcare providers basically feel right now that they have a gag order, that they are unable to speak openly and frankly with their patients or the patient's family after an unanticipated outcome, after death or something very terrible happens. So this is, again, trying to open up that dialogue and open up that conversation to happen.
Well, why don't we go ahead? We got two online, Megan Wallace, and we got Doug Wachezik. Doug, can you hear us online all right?
I sure can, yes, Senator. Thank you.
Doug, we are looking forward to your testimony. So put yourself on the record and give us your testimony, please.
Sure. My name is Doug Wachezik. Last name is W-O-J-C-I-E-S-Z-A-K. I am the founder of Sorry Works, for the considered to be the nation's leading training organization, teaching doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals how to talk with families and disclose when something goes wrong in a healthcare or medical setting. So I'll just speak for a couple minutes. I know you guys are on a tight time schedule. You're trying to get out of town the next couple of days, so I won't belabor it. I support this legislation. If you were to pass this legislation, Alaska would become one of 38, or I think it's now 39 states that have these apology laws. And basically what these laws do is they make doctors feel more comfortable about talking about adverse medical events with patients and families when something goes wrong. Erica mentioned that a lot of doctors and nurses feel like there's a gag order on them, or they're not allowed to say something. Well, actually they can. A lot of insurance companies and hospitals are now actively encouraging doctors and nurses how to do it, and guys like me are training them how to do it, so they can do it. What this law will do is give further encouragement, and we know there's data out there to show that states that pass these type of laws, you do see an uptick, a noticeable uptick, and doctors and nurses talking after something goes wrong. And that's to everyone's benefit. You know, that when something goes wrong, whether it's a known complication, you know, where the doctors did all they could, or a true error where there's mistakes, the best thing that can happen for the patient, family, as well as the doctors and nurses is a talk. It is to sit down and have an adult discussion, talk about what may or may not have happened, and then see if they can seek solutions. You know, patients and families, you know, they go seek lawyers and they go for big judgments and all that when doctors and nurses run away and hide. That gets people very, very angry. And the only way consumers can punish a healthcare professional under that set of circumstances is to get a lawyer and get as much money as they humanly can, whether they need it or not. So I think one of the senators asked a question, has a doctor ever had an apology used against them in court? It's interesting, there's a paper that came out a couple of years ago with Dr. John Banja of Emory University where he basically looked at that. He also looked at, has a doctor ever had an insurance policy canceled because of talking with the family afterwards, and he couldn't find any cases anywhere. There have been times where trial lawyers have tried to use it against docs, but it usually backfires because, what a trial lawyer wants to do in a court in a medical malpractice case is demolish a doctor, make him or her look like the most uncaring human being in the world, that just a horrible, wicked human being. So saying the doctor said they're sorry kind of screws up that storyline. Conversely, a lot of defense lawyers will tell you they'll want to bring this stuff into evidence if possible because it makes their client look pretty darn good. So again, I strongly support this bill. I hope you guys will give it every consideration and pass it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wojcicki. Is there any questions for him? I think Senator McGuire is with us, and I failed to note that earlier, so thanks for joining us. And she has a question for you, Doug.
No, I do not. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate your testimony. I just want to declare a real or perceived conflict on the record that my father is an orthopedic surgeon licensed in the state of Alaska.
All right, well.
I do a lot of work with orthopedic surgeons, and this is good stuff for them. All the high-risk specialists, they learn pretty quickly that this is actually the best thing they can do when something goes wrong is to get there and talk with that family.
And that's great. That wasn't even for you, Doug. It was for the chairman. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And, Doug, we appreciate you taking the time to join us in our committee meeting, and I think we have pretty good support for it at this point. I think Erica did a very good job of explaining the compromise portion of the bill. Greatly appreciate it. I do also have Megan Wallace from the Legislative Legal online if there's any questions just for the committee. It sounds to me, Erica, that the work has been done, and I don't know that there's any more. Is there any further discussion that the committee would like to have on this particular bill? Take a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass from committee CS for House Bill 250, Health and Human Services Committee /P.A, with individual recommendations. And I think
zero fiscal note. Zero fiscal note.
Yeah.
And this is the last committee referral, so it goes to the Rules Chair. Here in a few minutes. Any objection to moving the bill? Without objection, we'll move 250 Hess from committee with individual recommendations. Take a brief at ease while we sign this document.
Thank you.
All right, we'll bring the Judiciary Committee back to order. Next up is House Bill 127, which is the amendments to the Ombudsman Act. And we had a pretty good conversation on it yesterday and had testimony from the Ombudsman. And I think, Senator Wilkowski, you had some questions or some thoughts. Maybe we should, unless there's questions you wanted to get, anybody wants to get from the Ombudsman at this point.
Mr. Chair, I've got a couple amendments. I don't know if you... I can introduce those, and we can discuss, and I'm just trying to address the issues that we came up with yesterday. And
I think that's probably the best way to do it. We'll just take the amendments, and we'll discuss them, and then if there, we do have the Ombudsman here, who can help us respond to them in what they actually would, in fact, impact. So if you want to go ahead and move the amendment, I'll object. And we may bring them to a vote. We'll see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Move amendment number one.
Object.
Okay. So we had this discussion yesterday. I thought it was a good discussion. And I really do see both sides of the story with the Ombudsman. I understand what they're trying to get at with this. The section that's being added is a provision that says to the agencies, you can disclose the attorney-client privilege without waiving the privilege. The concern that I had was if in the course of the investigation the Ombudsman finds illegal activity, I don't think we should be shielding that activity, Mr. Chair. So went back to my office and sort of bantered this around for a little while and came up with this simple language to say if you uncover illegal activity, then that's not shielded by the attorney-client privilege. So, and just so you understand where my head is, that is trying to weigh that balance. We want the ombudsman to go in and have honest discussions with the agencies to try to figure out if what mistakes were made, if mistakes were made, because normally constituents contact us and they're the source through which our constituents try to get remedies for mistakes that have been made or errors that have been made. But by the same token, if it's uncovered that there's illegal activity, I think that should be disclosed, Mr. Chair. And so I'm happy to have a debate here and figure out whether it's good or not.
If I remember correctly, the discussion was that if they see something that is outside statute, that they apprise the people that they've contacted. So do you want to clarify that particular part of it? Linda Lord-Jenkins with here and with her legal counsel probably wouldn't be a bad idea, because we're under 2455-160, which is agency, I think, responsibilities at this point. So this would be Section 4, page 2, line 19. I'm sorry, it's...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no,
I've got a copy here, Mr. Chair.
We can actually give a copy to Linda Lord-Jenkins, if you don't mind. And I think the discussion yesterday, if I remember correctly, what I heard was if you find something that is outside of statutory authority, you usually apprise those people with whom you're talking to, and it's up to them to do a corrective action. This might require further disclosure. So how would this impact you at this point, Linda?
Chairman Coghill and Senator Wilkowski and committee. The ombudsman statute has two provisions in the statute right now that allows us to refer issues to to the governor, the legislature, a grand jury, the public, or any combination of those. That's in 2455-200 and also 2455-220, misconduct by agency personnel. If the ombudsman believes there is a breach of duty or misconduct by an officer or employee of an agency in the conduct of the officer or employee's official duties, the ombudsman shall refer the matter to the chief executive officer of the agency or, when appropriate, to a grand jury or another appropriate agency or official. We have on occasion, as part of our investigative functions, we have referred matters to the Alaska State Troopers, or at least asked them to investigate matters. We actually have an open case right now where that involves theft of cash, and we asked the troopers to look at the theft as part of our investigation. So it's not that we hide these things. But in the history of the office, we do have that option.
So under this requirement, you're talking about a new section dealing with privileged communication, unless the communication is evidence of illegal activity. What's the difference in this language here than what you would do in reporting to another agency? I guess that's probably what we'll be looking for, the new section, how it's operative with what you already have as a responsibility.
Yeah.
Go ahead and just put yourself on the record.
This is Beth Leibowitz, Assistant Ombudsman for the State Ombudsman's Office. To the chair and the committee, my understanding is this language is the way our statute is currently written under 2455-220. If we find evidence of misconduct, which tends to mean criminal activity, or some blatant illegality, but especially criminal activity, we have a duty to refer that appropriately, whether that's to the head of the department or agency that's involved, or to a grand jury or a prosecutor or the state troopers. But that does not give us the ability to disclose a record that is otherwise confidential that we couldn't publicize. Anyhow, we can... And in this case, with this subsection, what this amendment would apparently do is say that we that if we got a privileged communication that an agency chose to give us, that we would then proceed to hand that over as part of the referral. Without this, if what we're looking at is evidence of criminal activity, we can and would be able to refer it to the prosecutor or other appropriate authority, but we wouldn't be able to ante up a copy of a privileged communication that we were given. We could tip off law enforcement, but we couldn't hand over the precise privileged material that we had gotten.
Senator Dyson?
I'm sorry I was not available for yesterday's discussion. I'm sure there must be a difference between what you can disclose of the person who has come to you with a complaint or asking for an investigation. I assume that much of what they tell you is privileged.
To the chair and Senator Dyson, we have, for a complainant who comes to us, we have an obligation of confidentiality, and which is not quite the same as privilege, but we also then have a testimonial privilege which says that no, we will not go and talk about it. Our disclosure is only as necessary to carry out our duties.
So then the subject we're really talking about is when your client discloses illegal or alleged illegal activities by some group or person, that you can, under present law, refer that to the appropriate agency.
To the chair, our statute actually does not say much about what we would do if a complainant discloses criminal activity. We have a specific statutory provision for what to do if an agency employee is committing misconduct. And 2455-220 gives us a clear duty to refer that to the head of the agency or to law enforcement or both. But there is very little said about what we are intended to do if a complainant of a citizen then proceeds to give us details of the citizen's illegal activities.
No, now, excuse me if I may continue.
Senator Dyson.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
If the citizen tells you about some other person or group that is doing illegal activity, can you, under present law, disclose that?
To the chair and to Senator Dyson, I believe that is the case, yes.
Okay, so if I may, then
Senator Dyson,
I think I inferred from what you said that this amendment restricts you in some way that you're not presently restricted. Was that a correct inference?
To the chair and Senator Dyson, this amendment would not restrict us, but it would undermine the provisions that we're trying to put in place, where we're basically intending to allow an agency to share specifically attorney-client privileged material with us in the interests of being candid, but it's placing a concurrent duty on us to basically respect that privilege if they talk to us about it. It's not material that they have to provide us. There's no mandatory access on our part. We cannot require them to give us attorney-client privileged material. This bill section would allow them to do so and protect them from losing that privilege if they shared with us. And the proposed amendment to that section would basically say, well, your attorney-client privilege, if you share with us, well, actually, it's not really that good because we might go ahead and disclose. Right. And so I'm a little concerned about this amendment.
And I'm struggling to not get more confused. When this attorney-client privilege that you're talking about is an attorney-client relationship that your client has other than with you all, correct?
To the chair and Senator Dyson, this Section 4 of the bill deals specifically with attorney-client privileged material between an agency, as it's been generally talking about state agencies, this means an agency and their assistant AG, the Department of Law. This is not dealing with a complainant's material at all. This is dealing with an investigation of an agency, and it's aimed very specifically at the type of problem where we ask an agency why they have done something, and they say, well, because Department of Law told us that that's how we should do it, or they told us it was okay, and we ask them to clarify that a little bit.
Senator Wilkowski.
And I'll just give you an example of how I think this could impact. So a constituent calls you, says, hey, I have a concern with this agency, a complaint, you go ahead and investigate, and during the course of your investigation, you uncover documents from the agency that are attorney-client privileged, where the client, a division director or bureaucrat or whatever, says, I broke the law. And that under this, what we'd be doing is protecting that information. We'd be shielding that information, in fact, from just being disclosed. You have an obligation under the statute to report that, but you wouldn't be able to send along the accompanying document which says I broke the law. And so I don't know how that benefits the public if we're creating this shield. I just don't know that that's the right policy, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a bad policy, in fact.
Senator McGuire?
Yeah, and I was following Senator Dayson's question, and I think I was, and this is where I was going initially opposing the amendment, was the case of whistleblowers. So, and I think that might have been where Fred was thinking about, is where you've got a person out there, an Alaskan, who suspects something. Now they come forward, and you have the ability to tip off law enforcement, but this amendment could create or force you to disclose documents which might reveal their name. That is something I would be worried about, because I would fear retribution on the part of, you know, folks that were doing something wrong. So that is one case I'd want to protect. But it appears after the questioning with Senator Dayson that really you are kind of protecting the agencies. And I know that there's a balance here, which is that you want agencies to cooperate with you. And so you're resisting the amendment on the one hand because you want them to feel completely open to share with you all of the information to help you get to the bottom of something. But on the other hand, then there's the public's right to have reconciliation and to really understand, you know, what's going on. And so I'm definitely torn on this amendment.
Beth?
Through the chair and to Chair and Senator McGuire, I understand why you are torn. My personal belief on this is that if what we're looking at is a privileged communication by where a division director is admitting to Department of Law that they have committed illegal acts, they've blown it, that will lead us to enough non-privileged evidence that we will have plenty that we can disclose. The privileged communication, for instance, if it's the Department of Law telling the division or the department, no, you really shouldn't do it this way, this is going to be illegal. And it looks like they did indeed do the illegal thing. We're probably going to find plenty of non-privileged records in the custody of the agency that will give us plenty of material to work with to support recommendations, to support a referral to law enforcement if need be. Getting privileged material will probably help us investigate more effectively. Yeah. If what we're turning up is illegality, I think it will simply be the stepping stone that leads us to material that is simply not privileged and that we can go ahead and deal with.
Okay, I can support that.
Linda Lord-Jenkins.
Senator McGuire, through the chair. The other reality is that it's not that we hold this information only in our office. We do notify the commissioners. We have the option of notifying the governor, who has the ultimate responsibility for his administrative departments. But we would not be able to spell out chapter and verse to the complainant, who would not otherwise be entitled to that information. What we have done on the few occasions where that has come up is we have told complainants, you've alleged X, Y, and Z. We have found your allegations X and Y to be substantiated for these reasons. We have found allegation Z to be substantiated, but we can't tell you why, because this is based on confidential information that you would not otherwise be entitled to have. And under our statutes, we cannot release confidential information. So in the name of transparency, I certainly agree. I think that citizens have the right to know, but there are certain things that under the law, citizens are not entitled to know. Non-involved parties are not entitled to know. So the role of the ombudsman is trying to fix the situation, even if they don't divulge all of the grimy details to the complainants. The goal would be to say to the commissioner or the governor or the division director, your department, based on the information we received in our investigation, ignored your attorney's advice. We think that's a bad thing, and you need to pursue this with the Department of Law and with your department. But so in one sense, there is some satisfaction to the complainant because they found out that we may have ruled in their favor, but in the other sense, they may not know why. It would be like an Office of Children's Services case where we've had to tell grandparents who've made an allegation people who don't have personal interest in the complaint, that yeah, we found that the agency did what it is supposed to do or didn't do what it was supposed to do, but because this is based on confidential information, we can't tell you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Well, I don't think we should be passing laws to coddle the agencies and to allow them to not cooperate. I mean, I don't think the agency should be not cooperating with you right now, and apparently they are. That's what drove this. I mean, I think when we, you know, as a legislative body, we should be able to say to our departments here in Alaska, you must cooperate with the ombudsman. You must cooperate. And that means turning over your privileged documents. And if you turn over privileged documents and they show illegal activity, we're going to report it. I think that's a good state policy. I think we shouldn't be coddling the agencies and cajoling them to try to get them to cooperate with us. We as a legislative body should say, cooperate. You must cooperate. The people of Alaska demand that you cooperate, demand that you turn over this information, and if it shows illegal activity, we're going to send it on. I mean, that's just, I think, a policy call, Mr. Chair, but the more I hear this discussion, the more it convinces me that I think this amendment is the right way to go.
Senator Dyson.
This is fascinating to me, and it pushes some of my buttons, but did you say that the privileged communication between a branch of the state and the Department of Law's attorney delegated to that branch is stuff you can't get at because it's privileged because of that relationship?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, the statute was, when the Ombudsman Office was first created in 1976, we had access to privileged attorney-client information. When the bill was amended in the early 90s, that access was changed so that we do not have access under 330 to that information. That was changed by the legislature. My understanding, I was in the office, but I wasn't party to the discussions that had to do with that. My understanding is that change was requested by the public defender and the Office of Public Advocacy Defense Attorney section because they didn't want non-attorneys looking over their shoulder in terms when there was criminal defense going on. The unintended consequence of that was that we lost access to attorney-client privilege. Now, it is something that an agency can waive, and we have had agencies waive attorney-client advice, the privilege. When I was serving as an investigator in the mid-90s, I spent almost a week in an assistant attorney general's office going through his files and his communications with a specific agency because he obviously thought it was in their best interest to have us have that access. But the understanding is, based on case law that Ms. Leibowitz has come up with, that if an agency and the AG waives privilege as to one entity, then all other entities also have that access. Mm. So that's the reason. Mm. What this would allow an agency to do is to say, we will give this information to the ombudsman without having it be public information for everybody.
All right, Senator Dyson. Two quick ones then. You said this would allow, do you mean this amendment or this bill?
The bill.
The bill. Okay, allow you to get it without it going to the shotgun to the world of the information.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, the bill would allow an agency to waive privilege so that we could, if they chose, we could look at this. They would not, it would not obligate them to.
I got it. So does Senator Wilikowski's amendment get back to the original enabling privileges or options you had before it was revised by the legislature back in the 90s?
I'm going to let my lawyer answer that.
Through the chair to Senator Dyson, I think the amendment may approach some of the original version of the Ombudsman Act in terms of access and our ability to then disclose material we got through that access. So I think it is that we may not object to this amendment in principle, though I think it creates problems because right now an agency has absolutely no obligation to give us this material. And so if they're realizing that their waiver may basically not just waive it as to us, but basically give us a handle to put it out there if we think it amounts to illegal activity,
right,
then I think it tends to make this a much less useful piece of legislation for our purposes. Also, even though it may be a good principle in some ways, there's also, I'm afraid, the very practical thing that an amendment at this point will throw this bill back into a conference committee, and it will probably not make it out of the legislature this session. It'll die. And so as a purely practical matter, I'm a bit inhibited in supporting amendments at this point.
We all feel that pressure down here. But it is true that we also have to deal with what we think is the policy calls. Senator Wilikowski.
Just to Senator Dyson's question, what we're changing the law to say is the ombudsman may not disclose a privileged communication provided under this subsection. All I'm adding is unless the information pertains to illegal activity. So they're going to get all sorts of privileged communications. They can't disclose them unless it shows illegal activity. And I think that, to me, is a pretty common sense piece of legislation. If you find illegal activity, wouldn't we want that disclosed? Why would we want the agency to be able to shield it and not turn it over? So it makes sense to me. I'm open to debate and discussion if it's a bad idea. But
and I think probably what we need to find out is, are the agencies, without this amendment, are they in fact shielded? I guess that's probably one of the questions we should ask the ombudsman and their counsel. So, Ms. Leibowitz?
To the chair, as it stands now, they are completely shielded because we can ask an agency, did you get advice from the Department of Law, or why did you take this action? And we've had some agencies have, in fact, given us the privileged material at basically putting themselves at risk of a general waiver and having it come back to bite them in unrelated litigation. And we've also had agencies that have simply clammed up and said, oh, we're not telling you anything. So right now, especially if they think that privileged material will reflect some illegal activity, they are completely and utterly shielded. Not only in general, but they're shielded from even us, like, noticing that there's a problem.
Okay. So, but if, and maybe I should restate how I was thinking the question. If, in the course of your dealing with them, you do find out that they've stepped outside the law, either blatantly or inadvertently, what I understood from earlier testimony was you would still, once you were savvy to it, you would still deal with that. You would. It was just that the privileged communication would be confidential, but the issue itself would still be brought forward. Did I understand it correctly?
To the chair, you do understand it correctly, because if what we're looking at is an email between an assistant AG and an agency personnel that indicates illegal activity, then I would truly expect to find non-privileged records and evidence of actions, and actions are not attorney-client privileged. And basically, in other words, facts that can be in a report and that we can use.
Okay.
And we might not know enough to know about those if we're not seeing that communication to start with.
So if this bill does not make it, this section, subsection C, that is discussion of the amendment today, if this doesn't get into law, your ability for any privileged information is absolutely negotiated at this point. Is that, do I understand it correctly?
To the chair, right now it's that we have no ability to reach it, and the agency has actually an active disincentive to give it to us, because even if it's communications that would tend to show them to be in the right, it's basically they are putting their privilege, they're basically evaporating their privilege when they share with us, is my understanding of the existing case law. So not only do they are they not required to give it to us, there's actually a genuine downside that would prompt, I think, the most assistant AGs to say, no, don't let that go over there to the Ombudsman's office. And so we're trying to take care of that disincentive. Whether it will prompt an agency to ante up or not is still a matter of considerable question.
Okay. The last question, Senator Wilkowski.
I think many Alaskans are wary of government. I know many people in this building are wary of government. I want a strong watchdog. I want a strong ombudsman who is going to go in there and be able to get whatever they need. I don't think we should incentivize agencies to give this. I don't think we should coddle agencies to give this. Quite frankly, I think we should probably add, in light of this discussion, another provision, Mr. Chair, which says something to the effect of agencies must disclose attorney-client privileged or attorney work product privileged documents to the ombudsman upon request, and you keep everything out, keep Section C in place. You don't disclose it, but if you do find illegal activity, that's a whole new ballgame, that seems to me a policy to fix all the concerns that you have.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah. So the originator of this bill, Representative Keller, is a grand fan of the ombudsman's concept, and I am too. It's several hundred years old, what, 1,000? I happen to agree, I think, technically, with Senator Wilkowski, certainly in spirit, but I guess I don't want to jeopardize this bill getting through because it accomplishes a great deal. And I can tell you, Representative Keller is not going to give up on doing everything he can to improve and empower the Ombudsman's office. And so, I guess I want us to only do what's very necessary here and get the bill out so it can make it.
Yes, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, to the chair. You mentioned that before 1990, the Ombudsman's Office did have the power to compel discovery, if you will, of documents. And my first question is, did they have the power to compel attorney-client privilege documents as well? And that's the first question. And the second question is, would you have an objection to us putting that language back in now and asking, compelling them to put those, to provide documentation at your request?
To the chair and through the chair to Senator McGuire, the original statute was actually not express. It gave the ombudsman a broad power. And the reason for the 1990 amendments was increasing resistance from state agencies. Basically, we're not talking about attorney-client privilege right now. We're talking about things like personnel records and other material that is confidential, though not necessarily privileged. And the office experienced increasing difficulties with state agencies basically saying, oh, that's confidential. The ombudsman can't have it. And so the 1990 amendments were designed to make the ombudsman's authority to access agency records absolutely express. Now, as one of the compromises necessary to get that amendment through, attorney-client privileged material and attorney work product were excluded. So we knew that we could get at the stuff, but only through the absence of something saying yay or nay previously.
Interesting. And the way I understand it, Section C is your first attempt at getting back to attorney-client privileged information.
To the chair, that is correct. As we've noted, some agencies have shared the material with us, but I think they have been inadvertently putting themselves at more risk than they intended to when they attempted to be candid with us.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator McGlynn.
Through the chair, my concern, this has been a very enlightening conversation and disturbing all at the same time, but my concern is that probably the way it is now, and even putting this in is going to be, the net effect will be that an agency that has information that's attorney-client privilege that is on their side, they will disclose it. But in the case of information that is on the public side, and perhaps revealing of some misconduct or something that we might want to know, they're not going to reveal. And I think that's kind of precisely the point that Senator Wilikowski is getting at.
Linda Lloyd-Jenkins.
Senator McGuire, through the chair, that there is always that concern. I know that I have discussed this particular issue with other state ombudsmen, and Arizona comes to mind. Former Arizona Ombudsman Pat Shanahan and I talked about how he dealt with matters where the pivot question was, what did the AG tell you to do? And he did not have any sort of access to that information. And he made a point of making it abundantly clear that the AG and the agency did not cooperate with the ombudsman when they did not reveal that information. It occurs to me that it might not be a bad idea to think about this in baby steps right now. In the end, and we obviously have an interest in getting this bill passed. But we certainly can, for the next year, keep track of the times that we have asked agencies to waive attorney-client privilege and whether they did cooperate with us if this privilege, if this amendment goes through, and to see how, just to keep track so that we can report back to the legislature on how this amendment is working. That might be a workable solution. Senator Wilikowski, I absolutely agree. I think that we should have access to all of that information. As Beth and I have talked about this, Beth has made the argument that we're all under the same governmental tent, so that the ombudsman should not be treated as an adversary. But the reality is that lawyers, bless them, they do these sorts of things, and so we're trying to get around that right now. And this would give the agency the option of waiving that privilege. And quite frankly, if that's the only thing that stands in their way, the fact that they might waive it to all parties, it seems to me that would be a very telling fact if they don't have to worry about that waiver going to all parties.
Point well taken. Well, I'm going to maintain my objection to the amendment. I think there's some practical reasons, and certainly looks like there's always more policy calls we could make at this point. I will probably just maintain my objection. So any last comments, Senator?
I think obviously, as an attorney, a big believer in attorney-client privilege. I think with private parties, that's in you don't want to violate that. You don't want to step into that. I think with government, it's a little bit different. And with government, the taxpayers, the people of the state, are paying the salaries. The people of the state would be paying an attorney to potentially cover up a wrongdoing, an illegal activity. I just think that's fundamentally wrong. I think if there is illegal activity and you find it, it should be disclosed. I do think we need another provision, Mr. Chair, as I mentioned, that requires agencies to disclose attorney-client privilege. I think with government, it's different. I don't think it should be spread for the whole world to see. I think there's probably good policy reasons not to do that. But again, I want a strong ombudsman. I've had constituents who have had cases languish because I know you couldn't get information. And I want you to have that power to get what you need and get to the bottom of things. That's what we have you there for. So, you know, this amendment was an attempt to try to figure out a solution, Mr. Chair. I guess between now and the time it goes to the floor, I can continue to work on it. Mm-hmm. If there's not support in the committee to move forward on it. But I do think it's important. And we've got nothing but time, Mr. Chair, before the end of session.
The clock is ticking loud. Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Yes, so I think what it needs to say, you know, conceptually, the way that it needs to be is it needs to be that in providing the attorney-client privilege to you, it doesn't waive their privilege to any other person. So that's their protection. Because we don't want to get into this thing where, you know, then it goes to the media ahead of other decisions and so on and so forth, or to another adversarial party. But the point is, they should be compelled to give it to you. So I think it should be, they've got to give it to you, but it doesn't waive the privilege as to any other person. And oh, by the way, you can disclose it if it's illegal activity. That's just my sense as a policymaker. That's the right thing. I'm going to vote for the amendment because I think it's the right thing. I don't have a compelling reason not to. I think the case has been made for it. We're here right now. We have the time. It's Tuesday. I can't imagine the other body not agreeing.
Yeah, let's do this. I think you had one other amendment.
You know, yeah, I was going to say if perhaps I can work with you, Mr. Chair, your staff.
Let's do that. Let's lay it aside until tomorrow.
Or I can pull it back and I hate doing more amendments on the floor.
No, let's. If you pull this amendment off, let's just bring it back up tomorrow. Why don't we do some homework on this?
Okay.
Because I want to get it right. I don't want to do a policy that's going to set us back. So I'll withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chair.
We can put it right on the floor.
And then what I'll do is we have a meeting set up for 9:30 tomorrow morning, and I wanted to get the other bill up, but I think you make a legitimate point. The next thing is, can we actually get it through? Because I think if we lose a good provision because we wanted more provisions, I don't know that I would be supportive of that.
Okay.
So, Senator Dyson?
Yeah, and I would ask you to include bill sponsor.
Oh, yeah, I think that was the whole discussion.
And I would ask you to give great weight to sponsor.
I think that's what I meant by homework is let's find out if we can actually get this kind of a policy call over the finish line. Otherwise, we lose several good provisions that we may not be able to move forward on. And I think that's one of the practical issues. But I think the policy call, as you can see, is very sympathetic in this committee. So
thank you.
Beth, I saw you had a comment.
To the chair, is looking at this particular amendment number one, is I actually am sympathetic to the principles here, but I think this amendment does not actually help very much. It certainly, from a practical viewpoint, I think might jeopardize getting this legislation through, but also it does not, is basically by saying, well, okay, we'll disclose if the communication is evidence of illegal activity. Remember, this bill does not compel them to provide us with any privileged info whatsoever. So we are very unlike amendment number one, even if amendment number one goes through, I think that we are unlikely to obtain privileged material that would fit this amendment. Because I think we will be more likely to get stuff that an agency at least thinks will clear it of wrongdoing rather than the other way around.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator McGuire.
Just to wrap up on that point so that you completely understand what I'm proposing is exactly your point. You're coming at it through the back door, and I'm saying just address it out in the light of day, which is to say you're going to compel it. You're going to compel it in all cases, so you're not providing a disincentive, because I believe that with or without this language, you're only going to get agencies cooperating with you if they believe it helps them. And then so you compel it, but you make sure that they don't waive it as a result of the attorney-client privilege to any other parties, and they can't disclose it unless it's illegal activity. So it's kind of a three-step process.
I'll work with you and your staff and Senator McGuire and Senator Dyson and the bill sponsor and the ombudsman.
And it's a good point brought up, good discussion. And I think you're right. What we did was we tilted very heavy on one side of the argument. And if we're going after bad guys, we just let them off the hook. So I think Senator McGuire brings an excellent discussion to that. So I'm going to lay the bill aside. We'll bring it up tomorrow, 9:30 a.m. I only have 9:30 to 10:30, so we'll have to do it rapidly. Senator Wilkowski.
Mr. Chair, I did have an amendment number two. Perhaps I could distribute it now, and then everyone can take a look.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
And then we can, I won't move it now unless you want me to.
No, let's just, if you don't mind, I'd like to look at it overnight in conjunction with both both the thoughts that you had brought up. So, did you get a copy to the ombudsman?
I had extra copies made.
Okay, thank you. All right, so, it'll take a little bit of study on my part because you're deleting some significant material, so it'll be interesting to see.
It's actually one section, but there's some additional language. But.
All right, so that's going to bring this bill up for discussion tomorrow, and if we can get the agreement, because this is the last committee referral, that's why I wanted to make sure we had this discussion, and if we can get a policy call that we know we can get across the finish line, we'll work at it. If we can't get a policy call, goes across the finish line, then we'll have that discussion. All right? All right. Thank you very much, Linda Lloyd-Jenkins. Thank you very much, Beth. And with that, we're going to lay aside the House Bill 127, and we're going to take up now House Bill 140. And here I've got a bunch of people online. I've got several people online to testify, and
do they have a copy of the CS?
I don't know that we have a copy of the CS. We do have the sponsor here, so why don't you come forward? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a motion. I'm going to have one of the senators here make a motion to adopt the K version, and then I'd like to have that as my working document. And I think the representative may have some disagreement with me on the K version, but I wanted to get it in front of us. We'll talk about it, and then we have I got five people to testify. Probably if they hear what I'm proposing in the discussion between me and the representative, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Chairman, I move that we have as our working document for Senate CS for CS for House Bill number 140, and it's the / K version as our working document.
And I will object at this point, and I did get a chance to get this particular CS to the sponsor. It does several things. It takes the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, the Board of Fisheries, Board of Game, Alaska Public Office Commissions, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission out of the requirements, and I think that's just kind of the high-end approach. So, Representative Reinbold, thank you for coming to the committee, and I know I'm a pain in your neck, but give us your testimony on this particular version. I know you've only got to see it for the last hour or less, so we can hold it over till tomorrow, but do you have some thoughts on it?
Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Judiciary, thank you. I'm glad it's fresh in your mind, the version. And with the indulgence of the chairman, I would like to make some comments, and then I'm going to have my staff just come up for the technical issues. But first of all, I just want to say version G.A, which I presented yesterday, did make it through the House with 16 co-sponsors and a 37-0 vote with no exclusions. And that's why version S, which I was hoping to have before you today, after legal review on both sides of the aisle, and also some provisions were excluded based on policy calls. Version S is a very, very good version in our opinion. However, version K, we understand that the power of the chairman, and we unfortunately see real concern with version K. We may lose significant transparency and unnecessary exclusion by a number of agencies. This is called the Regulatory Impact Transparency Act, and with your permission, I'd like to read four principles of what my guiding principles for writing the legislation.
Yes, please do.
Okay, principle 15. Basically, the highest level of prosperity occurs when there's a free market economy and a minimum of government regulations. The government should be separated into three branches, and with this new version, I just want to ensure that the Department of Law does not have any undue influence over this legislative branch. Principle 17, a system of checks and balances should be adopted to prevent the abuse of power by the different branches of government. And Principle 19, only limited and carefully defined powers should be delegated to government and all others being retained by the people. The whole purpose was to empower the people in this legislation when I went door to door, and I really want to keep it as high level as we can, and I do appreciate and respect this body very much and the power of the chair. And so with that, there's some technical versions. Jim Pound has worked for many of us in this body and has really, and he's also worked for me during the interim and had a major influence on this piece of legislation, as is Crystal Keeneman. So with that, I would ask permission for them to come speak to the specific changes.
Sure. And before you go, though, I do have some folks online, and what I want to do is just ask if there were some people that just could not make it back to a committee meeting tomorrow morning at 9:30. So let me just ask that, if you don't mind.
Oh, please.
So I've got Norm Rothberg, who's with the RCA. I've got Stuart, who's also Assistant AG, Stuart Goring. I've got two people in Delta Junction that wanted to speak. They're just, it looks like, just on their own. And so, and Mark Eck from Fairbanks. Do you mind if I take the first few minutes of those who are not agency people, let them testify?
Fully, Mr. Chairman, you are in full control.
I think when people, one of the reasons I came to the legislature is I stood for 3 hours. It cost me almost a day's wage to come testify, and the chairman never got around to me, and I was so mad.
Mm-hmm.
So James Squires from Delta, you're online. Can you hear us?
They just hung up.
Oh, no.
I'll have them call back tomorrow.
Who is Pamela Good from Delta Junction?
On the same one.
Okay. How about Mark Eck from Fairbanks? Oh, man. I'm going to have to eat a little humble pie to Delta Junction. Mark Eck?
Hi, I'm here.
Why don't you put yourself on the record and give us your testimony on this particular bill? Thank you.
Well, I'm Mark Eck from Fairbanks, and it's real short and sweet. I believe that passing HB 140 is a good way to limit overreaching, unconstitutional regulations on the people and businesses that support this state and this country's economy. The founders of this country did not intend for agencies to be able to bypass the lawmaking system outlined in our federal constitution that are currently allowed, virtually unchecked. We are currently riddled with excessive regulations from various agencies that have little to no check on the way they operate. Regulations can be meant to help people, but oftentimes they have unintended consequences that hurt more people than they help. Usually regulations have huge financial effects on the businesses that support Alaskan families, but also bring revenue into the state budget. Adding a check to these agencies' abilities to apply or repeal regulations by having the governor review them will add a small safeguard to unintended consequences of regulation. I further support the bill's requirements for posting a notification to the public about regulations, as it helps the people comply with such regulations. And that's all. Thank you.
Mark, thank you very much for taking your time to testify. I think you got a very sympathetic committee at this point. Some disagreement on how we're going to do it, but I think on the principle. We do have James Squires and Pamela Good online. So, James, why don't you put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of this committee. My name is James Arthur Squires. I am an Alaska private citizen and landowner. It is my distinct pleasure to testify before you today in favor of HB 140. Almost everyone agrees that we have a problem. There are regulations on the books that overreach the statute. If we did not have this problem, then you folks in the legislature would not have the Administrative Regulation Review Committee. Governor Sean Parnell would not have written Administrative Order 266, which deals with minimizing the cost, time, and burden to the affected public of complying with state regulations and encouraging state agencies to work with all stakeholders to meet the objectives of Alaska statute and to ensure that state regulations are consistent with Alaska statutes and limited to carrying out the statutory purpose. It is extremely important that what regulations do hit the books are fully vetted by the legislature and Alaska private citizens. It looks like we need a few more checks and balances in the regulation writing stage to avoid the unnecessary burden of dealing with them after the fact. Well, as the Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, source of government, all political power is inherent in the people. All government originates with the people. It's founded on their will only. HB 140 provides another tool in our toolbox to hold these state agencies that write all these regulations accountable and encourages dialogue between all parties. Used effectively, it should help in limiting the size and scope of government. It is extremely difficult to get old, overreaching regulations off the books. I had the distinct honor of testifying for about 15 minutes as part of what turned out to be an hour-long statewide effort to merely change language from shall to may in Alaska Administrative Code 11 AAC 93.140. That simple word shall in that regulation violates Alaska Constitution Article 1, Sections 1, 2, 22, and 14. Now, I would encourage everyone here to go listen to the Administrative Regulation Review Committee meeting of April 10 to get a full brief on this example of a department, this state stepping on individual liberties. Many of the state departments say they need every one of their regulations, no matter how overreaching they are. They cite broad statutorial powers, which allow their bureaucracies to grow seemingly unchecked. Most everyone listening to this testimony is aware of the severe financial crisis looming on the horizon for the state of Alaska. We continue to spend more than we take in and continue to do so even in the face of future projected falling revenues. It is important that we run the leanest, most efficient state government possible. It is important that these departments, with their regulations, do not exceed their statutory limits by one inch, costing the state untold dollars in future compliance and enforcement. People of Alaska depend upon you, our elected representatives, to protect us from overreaching state agencies, and I applaud HB 140 as a new tool in the toolbox to work towards that end. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, James, and I appreciate you. You spit that out pretty fast, and I appreciate that. How about Pamela? Do you want to testify?
Yes, thank you. Chairman Coghill, members of the committee, my name is Pamela Good, and I am a private citizen. I am supportive of HB 140. I was of the understanding that the state government had control over the state bureaucrats and the regulations that they write. I have just recently been brought to my attention that that's not necessarily true. And the reason I'm going to support that is by sharing with you an example of some of the problems we're having in a committee that I sit in. It's actually a work group. Called the Groundwater Protection and Water Well Stakeholder Work Group, and it's made up of private citizens, well drillers, and bureaucrats, DEC and DNR. And what we're tasked to do is to put together a website, and we thought some guidelines so that the average Alaskan could have a place to go to find out how to protect the water wells, their private, public, and the groundwater system. And what we have determined is that there was a lot of conflict in there over privacy issues, the data, the well drillers' logs, and a lot of it we felt as private citizens overreached statute and constitutionality. And as the conflict got worse, I asked a simple question, and it's done after hours. Who in this work group is getting paid and who's not? Because a lot of people are contributing, Alaskans contributing their own time and energy against who? And the conflict was against DNR and DEC. And I received an email back, and it said the wellhead protection is funded 100% by the EPA and is a required element needed for Alaska to maintain primacy for the Safe Drinking Water Act. And this work group that we're involved with is included in the annual work plan by the EPA. So, with that said, when I was listening in on the Administration Regulation Review Committee and heard a DNR employee state, we need that data, because that's one of the biggest controversies is the data around the private well. We need that data. Well, now it makes sense to me that their boss is not you and their boss is not me. It's the federal EPA, and I think the legislature needs to regain their proper lawful authority. Thank you for your time and attention.
Pamela, thank you very much. And James, Pamela, and Mark, I really appreciate you taking the time to come to the committee. We're only going to have 5 minutes left. I'm going to leave because I want to have Jim Pound come the last few minutes and talk about this K version. I got Norm Roeppberg, Kathy Forrester, Lynn Kent, and Stuart Goring. My intention is to bring this up tomorrow morning together with the other bill on the ombudsman. But I wanted, to be fair, I put the K version out. We didn't get it drafted, I think, until like it was almost 1 o'clock before 1:30 before we got it. So, or I guess it was 1 o'clock that we finally got it. So, and the sponsor feels like I stepped on her toes a little bit, and I did. I couldn't get everything done in the time allotted. But I know Jim Pound had some particular points he wanted to make. And Jim, why don't you come on forward, sit here alongside the representative, and just pull up a chair there. And thank you for your patience with the chairman. I felt very strongly that some of these issues, if we're going to move forward, I wanted to be able to get as much as we could, but some of the big agencies, I felt we could not move forward in there, but I want to give you a chance to talk to me about it.
Mr. Chairman, can yes. I have my staff also, Crystal Kieneman?
Crystal,
if you don't mind.
Pull up a chair.
Okay, thank you.
Move aside, make room for everybody.
Thanks, Senator Coghill, members of the committee. My name is Jim Pound. I'm actually staff to Representative Keller, but for a long, long time, I've been involved in the regulatory process in the legislature, and once again, this past summer during the interim, in assistance to Representative Reinbold, I had the opportunity to get back involved in it again. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not, but in any event, we started working on House Bill 140 as one of the projects that we did over the interim. And where we are, and with the version K, I do continue to have some minor difficulties, I believe, as the sponsor, and I'm speaking hopefully on behalf of the sponsor. We still believe that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska should not be given the exemption, and for a lot of reasons. First of all, what they deal with is pipeline tariffs and utilities. Every time the RCA sits down and a utility comes to them and offers, they said they want a rate increase. I've yet to hear what up and coming ask for a rate decrease. It seems that in some fact, it's always approved. Whether it's a full amount or some amount, they directly affect the people, the public. If they improve a pipeline tariff, gas prices go up. They approve a rate increase for a utility, your light bill goes up, telephone bill goes up. And I just ran into this today, as a matter of fact, that they've been given an approval on the Kenai Peninsula. I'm trying to return home, and my telephone bill is going to go up considerably over what it was last year. It's just an ongoing thing with the RCA. I cannot address the Public Officers Commission because I was unaware that that particular issue was going to come up, and without doing some homework, I would not feel.
And I'm not exactly stuck to that issue, but I think that it was about 2 years ago that they made some regulations that were going into the area, almost taking over the whole ethics statute, and it concerned me. So I thought it would be something that I should bring up. At this particular point, I just wanted to highlight it. It was not meant to exempt them at all. I just wanted to highlight the fact that they are somebody I was thinking we should deal with. But the way it was drafted, these were left out, and my expectation is we would probably put them back in. But I wanted to hear the discussion on the RCA because that's probably where we're going to end up on the discussion tomorrow.
We have more senator ideas for sure.
Yeah.
That we can discuss.
And Senator McGuire has.
Thank you, through the chair, and thank you, Jim Pound. If you could just—I don't know if you're prepared to continue, but. I wanted to hear your thoughts on Board of Fish and on AOGCC.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, the Board of Fish and the Board of Game are both constitutionally mandated. In discussions with the sponsor, we have no objection to them. Their process is much more public than other boards and commissions. They go out of their way to the point of if they're talking about something on the Kenai Peninsula, they're there.
Okay.
If they're talking about something in Fairbanks, they're there. They make it a point to engage the public on every decision they make. Except for the exception, of course, of emergency regulations, but that's a short-term type situation that lasts maybe 40 days.
Crystal, did you have some thought on that?
Yeah.
Pull the mic over and just put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Reinbold. I don't know if one of the best things we might do is kind of walk through the changes of the bill and then address our concerns on those.
And we won't have time to do that today. That's why I wanted to have just kind of a very high-level discussion.
Understood.
Because tomorrow, I'm going to maintain my objection on version K. We'll have this conversation tomorrow. We are going to have to be concise. You're going to have exactly half an hour for your conversation, and it'll be exactly half an hour for the ombudsman. I'll put you up first, and then the ombudsman will be last. But we are going to have to keep it limited to a half an hour. So I wanted the high-level conversation at this point. I wanted them to know what my initial thinking was and then go from there. So you get the last say if you want it. You got 1 minute.
Mr. Chairman, to address Senator McGuire's concerns or question regarding the Board of Fish and Board of Game, there are certain justifications that we have found for potentially including them as exempting them in the bill. One of the things is the cost analysis. There's been the decision of whether or not with fish runs and who's catching the fish and how those are done, whether or not those cost analysis could be done. The other piece is with the agency comments, as Jim mentioned, they do have an open process with their public comments.
And AOGCC?
And as well as AOGCC.
Same okay. Question. All right.
Okay.
All right, so with that, Senator Wilkowski just entered. Tomorrow we're going to bring this up as the first. I have the version K. There might be some changes to the version K. Okay. I wanted to bring it up to the discussion for Representative Reinbold. Representative, you get the last word.
Okay, and with that, there are certain provisions that they needed to be excluded from and other provisions that they should not be after legal review.
Okay. Okay. So tomorrow we'll bring those up.
Yes.
And the first half of the meeting will be on House Bill 140. Last half will be on the Ombudsman Bill. We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And sorry for leaving those online. But tomorrow morning, 9:30 a.m., we're adjourned.